meeting of the House Community Regional Affairs together at 8:35 on May 9th. With us, for the record, we have Representative Scalzi, Representative Kutula, Co-Chairman Representative Morgan, and myself, Representative Meyer. We have one item to take up before us, Senate Bill 4. This is a continuation of our last meeting. There is some interest to also revisit Senate Bill 181, so we'll see where we go with that. I see the sponsors here for Senate Bill 4, and just to bring you up to speed, we do have a CS that has been done. Would somebody like to make a motion for the CS?
I'm sorry.
Could we have a motion to...
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I make a motion to put up House Bill, or is it Senate Bill 4?
The E version.
CS for CS for Senate Bill 4.
The E version code. Okay. And what this did, this made the one change that we had, which was to raise $5,000 to $10,000. And then we were discussing amendment number 2, which is still on line 13, page 1. And that motion had not been made. We wanted further discussion. I do see, for the record, Representative Guest is here. She's the one that had brought that up. Representative Guest, would you like to bring your question concerning your possible amendment to the sponsor, Senator Terrio?
I think we discussed it last time. I think the testimony was, at least the explanation, I think, was very clear, but I know that there's some questions about the fiscal impact, so why don't you, the Senator, can address those.
Mr. Chairman, and my apologies for having to leave the meeting the other day before this was discussed. We've asked Dan Dickinson with the Department of Revenue to put together a spreadsheet, and I think one of the things that has gotten lost in this discussion, and partially because the way that the fiscal notes were written, the fiscal notes originally were written that if the borough granted increased property tax exemption and suffered a loss, what they would have to do to, how much they would have to increase the mill rate to just recoup that loss, and what the potential impact would be to the state treasury. When you do the calculation just on recouping that loss, it's fairly minimal. But when you get to where you're talking about the North Slope borough, because their oil and gas properties are so vast, and you can see down here on the bottom side part of the spreadsheet, the second to the last column, North Slope Borough, their assessed valuation is over $10 billion. And the concern on the Senate side was that certainly if you just wanted to recoup the little bit of loss, you know, how much would that be? But in addition, if they granted you each an additional $5,000 of property tax exemption and then raised the millage rate to completely erode that, so the impact to the property owner is net zero, you're going to pay the same tax bill. So they've more than recouped the loss that they have from you, the loss from the property tax. You follow that? But when you, that slight increase in the millage rate that it would take to erode that and make it net zero to you, the residential property taxpayer, when you multiply that by the $10 billion of assessed valuation, you can see in the last column there the potential impact, and I think Mr. Dickinson is online and I need to get this clarified. I think he did the calculation. If you made the entire $15,000 of property tax exemption net zero, the impact to the state treasury from the North Slope borough alone would be over $11 million. Okay. Now, if I'm correct that he did it calculated on the complete $15,000, we're talking about just adding $5,000, so it would be one-third of that. And you can see under the House version of the bill, that's the last set of figures in the far right-hand column, if we use the House numbers and they raise the millage rate to make the impact to the residential payer net zero, the impact would be up over $100 million potentially to state treasury. So that's one of the things that the state was looking at, is what happens if the millage rates are manipulated to gather more of that property tax revenue, have it accrue to the local municipality. And when you're talking about Fairbanks and Kenai and Valdez, you have a real mix of residential property, small business owners that help to keep that millage rate in check. You really don't have that dynamic, or as much of that dynamic coming into play on the North Strait Borough, because so much of their property tax base is the oil and gas properties. It's not a small mom and pop business, so there's not as much of a pressure on the local community to keep that millage rate under check.
Question?
I'll take round two, the explanation from Dan, only because I think I got most of it that I wanted. Or if you want to go through it one more time, but maybe if I get it.
Okay.
Because and maybe the other question I have for Dan is, then why isn't the fiscal note 1.2 million, the new evaluation, versus the 200,000 here? So that's, I guess, the other question I have. If we're going to use the evaluation of the North Slope under the alternative method, seems like then the fiscal note should be the alternative method and not the current method. So maybe Dan could answer that.
Yeah, the difficulty is it's not a decision that we control. We don't know what the local governments will do. And I know from my own government, at the time that I put this bill in last year, they were considering a property further property tax exemption and make up a revenue sales tax, things of that nature. And so because each individual community could handle things differently, it was difficult to figure out, well, exactly what should we put on the fiscal note. But if you have a specific question for Mr. Dickinson.
And we do have Mr. Dickinson and Mr. Van Zandt online for questions. Is there any additional questions for the sponsor? Okay, Representative Guest, do you have some questions for Mr. Dickinson?
If Dan would run through his the DOR model SBHB 4.6, that would be great.
Mr. Dickinson, are you online?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I am. Thank you. Representative Guest through the chair. I'm assuming you have the same sheet in front of you that I have in front of me, and I'm going to guess that you don't want me to go through the first 10 columns, but just focus on the different numbers in the last column?
That's correct.
Okay. And I think what both Senator Terrio and Representative Guest have pointed out are in fact, are quite accurate. If we were to use the alternative method, as the bill is now drafted for SB 4, with the North Slope Borough included, we would put in the fiscal note $1.4 million. If we were to remove that language so the North Slope Borough could take advantage of this, the fiscal note would jump to 12.7. I think what you can see is using the method that we have used, and this would be the top block of figures, we in fact rounded it off to 200,000, and it really, the North Slope Boroughs, the effect of that was within the rounding error. I think the point is that, and just to get to a point that Senator Terrio spoke to, and I maybe it's going to be a little bit of a wishy-washy answer. If you look at the third block of text down, this is based on the effect of a $5,000 exemption, an additional $5,000 exemption. You then have to recoup that against the rest of the value of the home. And I've just made the assumption of $100,000 value for the home. I was not able to find out if that's a good figure or not. I used it. And then what that means is you then have to recoup against the remaining $85,000 that are taxed. So in that sense, it does include the effect of the $10,000 already being exempt. I think if you look at this, if the $100,000 number for the average home is wrong, that will drive the figures here. If the average home is worth less, then the numbers will be driven up. The fiscal note impacts will be driven up because you'll have to raise the mill rate more to offset the 5,000 against the smaller base. By the same token, if in fact the average home value is higher, the effect will be opposite. The fiscal note numbers would go down. But I think the main point with that Senator Terrio made, and it's accurate, is the actual base of residences in the North Slope borough is fairly small. I think if you look in the first block of text and you look at column B, you can see that the effect of the current $10,000 exemption is only $2.3 million. Again, there's some issues here with residential and commercial property, but that suggests that there's only about 237 homes that are able to take advantage of the full amount of that credit.
We have follow-up questions. Representative Guest, go ahead.
Dan, I guess I do need you to walk me through the entire spreadsheet and your assumptions. At least, I don't need to know the SB 6 stuff, but the SB 4.
Yeah, House Bill 6, Senate Bill 4.
Correct.
I'll find.
Okay, Representative Guest, through the chair. Do you want me to do it both the current fiscal note method and the alternative method?
Yes, please.
Okay. Representative Guest, through the chair. We start out with a total assessed value in the four boroughs that take advantage of this $10,000 exemption. And so you can see the totals there. The North Slope is three times the size of the Fairbanks or Kenai Peninsula, and Valdez is about one-tenth of that.
This is all property?
This is all property. It may be all real property.
Okay.
I know Mr. Van Zandt's online as well. Maybe he can correct me there. I'm not sure if the personal property, which is taxes, included in those figures or not. But it includes both residential, commercial, and oil and gas property.
Okay.
The next column is the value of the $10,000 exemption that those municipalities or boroughs are currently taking. That's the effect on their tax base. So the current tax base is the difference between those two. And I believe, and again, Mr. Van Zandt can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that in the total assessed value, we've already taken the effect of the senior citizens and the disabled veterans exemption, but I am not 100% sure on that. I then take in column D, I look at the current mill rate, and that's expressed as a percentage. So, for example, looking at the Fairbanks number, that would be the effect of 15.5 mills. The Kenai Peninsula would be 9.5 mills. North Slope Borough, 18.8 mills, and Valdez is at 20 mills. So column E simply multiplies the current tax base times the millage rate and says this is the amount of revenue that that municipality raises from their property taxes. Column F, and here's the first place where you'll see a difference between SB4 and HB6, I said, what do I need to do to the exemption to figure out what it would be, how much the exemption would be if it were 15,000 instead of 10,000? And obviously that's not going to be a precise comparison, because if someone had a value, say a mobile home, say, or something that was at 12,000, we wouldn't pick it up just right. But I think as an order of magnitude, this is a decent way of figuring out the amount, the increase in the exemption that would occur if you raised it to 15,000 in the SB4 analysis or 40,000 in the HB6 analysis. Then in column G, we do the same thing that we did earlier. I simply take the new exemption, I subtract it from the total assessed value over an A, and say here's the new tax base given the new exemption rate. I then take that new tax base, divide it through by the amount of revenue that they raised, would raise under the current tax base, and derive a millage rate. And in all cases, as you'd expect, the millage rate goes up a little bit, because if you've got a smaller base, you have to charge at a slightly higher percentage rate to come out with the same number. Column I simply subtracts this new derived millage rate. Subtracts the old rate from the new rate to come up with the incremental rate, how much additional millage is going to be charged. Column J gives you the tax base which is from AS 4356 properties. And I think, as Senator Terrio rightly observed, the North Slope borough doesn't change very much, whereas in Fairbanks, Kenai, and Valdez, in fact, the AS 4356 base is significantly less than the total assessed value. You then multiply that new incremental rate you have times the tax base to come up with the effect on the property base, on the AS 4036 property base, that would come from this higher millage rate. And again, as I'm sure folks are aware, if the state taxes at 20 mils but allows a credit for any local property taxes, therefore, if the local property taxes go up dollar for dollar, the state's revenue from this source goes down. So the effect you now see, and I think I can sort of run through, is for SB4, if you include all four boroughs, you're at $238,000. If you subtract the $21,000 of the North Slope borough, you're at $216,000. And we rounded these off to the nearest $100,000. So that's why we just said two in the fiscal note. Again, I don't know if it's appropriate for me to talk about HB6, but I did the analysis on here, and again, you'll see the numbers, and I think 1.5 if you include all four boroughs, 1.4 if you exclude the North Slope borough. Is that clear? Should I go on to the next piece?
It's clear for me, but I'll look around.
No.
Go ahead. Representative Scalzi, and then Representative Petula. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was with you till the end there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you said that this is the effect without the North Slope borough. I mean, the North Slope's got a line item all the way through. Why are you saying that that's the effect without the North Slope?
Representative Scalzi, through the chair. What I have there is a line that says total, which is the sum of the four.
Yeah.
And then the next line down, it says effect without North Slope borough. And all I've done for that is subtracted out the North Slope borough's contribution to the total above.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay. And the same thing, I think if you look, you'll see the difference between 238 and 216 is about 21.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So to continue down to the alternative method, which just, you know, on all these things, what we're doing is an as-if, so there's clearly different ways of thinking about what the as-if is. Excuse me. I tried to line these up so that some of the categories sort of lined up. But we start here with a current mill rate at column D.
Could I ask a question before I forget it? This is Beth. Hi, Dan. Thanks.
Hi.
I'm getting confused about why. And I'm sure you're going to be able to explain this, but I guess it's all because it's all in the same statute. Why, when we give a property, a homeowner property exemption, do we have to automatically put the impact against the oil and gas property? Why can't we split it out?
Representative Curtula, through the chair, I think you accurately identified why not. The statute requires that a locality tax its residential, commercial, and oil and gas properties at the same rate. And I think Senator Terrio identified why. Otherwise, you might have a temptation to say, gee, we're going to exempt our homeowners from paying anything and ask the commercial or the AS 4356 taxpayers to bear the whole burden. The notion was you'd keep that in check by requiring the same one be levied. And I believe, I don't have my statutes in front of me, but I think you'll find that in AS 4356-010B, but I'll check on that later.
Well, let me ask you a question. So do other states do this precisely the same? I mean, I'm not sure I agree with keeping it exactly the same. I can see differences for splitting it out.
Representative Curtula, through the chair, I don't know precisely what other states do because there are a number of other ways in which the way we do this differs. Excuse me. What I think is unusual is the fact that we have a single mill rate and then allow the credit for other allow the credit for the local municipalities. In fact, what I think would be most typical, and I don't have this research in front of me, is what you would find is the legislature would establish, say, one rate for commercial property, one rate for industrial property. Typically, you'll have farming property is given a higher exemption or a lower rate, if you will. Thank you. But the point there is they are looking at the state as a whole, and what you don't have is a town or a municipality that's fortunate enough to have a very large industrial complex in it, asking that complex to bear the entire burden and exempting the homeowners. But obviously, and you can look at the state as an example, you can certainly decide to have one industry bear the burden and not no one else.
Dan, this is the chairman. But it's been that way for some time, hasn't it, since the early 80s?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Actually, from the early 70s, this bill came into place before TAPS was operational. And just as a historical point, at that time, local mill rates were in the 7 or 8 mills. So the state was picking up roughly 2/3 of the tax, not the much smaller portion that it is now.
And I think your example, like a community like Valdez, could exempt all the residents from any taxes and then just tax all the commercial property.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, that's right. If you look at it, roughly 2/3 of their property is in the – excuse me, 2/3 of their property value resides in the marine terminal. And so, you know, the maximum rate by a different law is 30 mils. So if they simply raised up to 30 mils and exempted all residential property – you know, Valdez's city budget would stay about the same, or the amount they raised from this could stay the same.
Okay, I think we're veering off a little bit here.
Excuse me.
Did you have any additional questions?
Well, I do, but I think they're further in the graph. Thanks.
Okay. Did you want to continue on then, Dan?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, again, we start now. I'm down onto the alternative method and what I'll call the third and fourth block here. We start again with a current mill rate. We then go and put in the amount of the proposed new exemption. And probably my title there is imprecise. It shouldn't be the amount saved by the homeowner because clearly that's the full amount of the exemption. So that's an inaccurate title. In SB 4, I put in 5,000. In HB 6, I put in 30,000, which would be the incremental, the change. Next, in column F, you simply say how much money is the homeowner saving by taking that additional exemption. And this, again, assumes no change in the mill rate. You say at the current mill rate, at $5,000 at the Fairbanks North Star mill rate of 15 mils, a homeowner saves $78. You can go down 48, 94, or in Valdez, 100. I then made the assumption, and this is again an assumption that I tried to do some research on and wasn't successful, so I just used $100,000 as my average home value. I said on a home that at a home that's been valued at $100,000, if you have a $15,000 exemption, that means all the tax that you pay is going to be paid based on 85. So the question is, what mill rate do you need so that the homeowner notices no difference as a result of taking the exemption and paying a higher mill rate? And I think if you think about the math a minute, no municipality can design a system that does that, at least with a single mill rate, because the higher the value of the home, the easier it is going to be to make up the $5,000 exemption. In other words, if you have a fixed exemption, but the tax is calculated as a percentage, you're going to have to make the average homeowner come out neutralized neutral. You can't do it for every homeowner. Be that as it may, let me proceed here. We now say how much do you need to make up against the $85,000 of value left in the home? And the answer is you need an incremental 9/10 of a mil. Again, I'm reading across the top line of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And that's simply figured out by dividing the amount saved, the amount you have to make up, in other words, through by the value that's still taxable, the $85,000. So we now come up with a new incremental. Excuse me, was there a question?
No, just a cough.
Okay, thank you.
It's okay.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We then take the new incremental mill rate, multiply that times the tax, the AS4356 tax base, because just, you know, you help the homeowner go up by that incremental amount, also the AS4356 taxes would go up. And what you see is, in fact, because these incremental mill rates are higher than the analysis, the current fiscal note analysis, all of the values go up. What happens, of course, is if the AS4356 tax base is large, the amount goes up a huge amount, and that's why you see the North Slope borough. I'll just say a number that kind of jumps out at you compared to the other. But I think it is, you know, all of the numbers increase, and that will be both the result of how big the incremental millage in column I is, and where there you can see that in fact North Slope borough and Valdez have a much higher increase than Fairbanks and Kenai is lower, and how much was in the tax base. And then again, just to skip ahead, the two numbers there, like the analysis above, the first one sums it up, $12.7 million. The number right below it looks at what you get if you don't include the North Slope borough. And again, these are all maximums because clearly when you go down to the analysis for HB6, you get numbers that no longer make any sense because you'd simply run out of you'd run into some other limitations. So if you had the $40,000 exemption and performed this analysis, you would get at least to the North Slope borough, and I believe Valdez, you would run into other limitations which might limit that. And that, again, I'm certainly welcome to take questions or walk through pieces if I rush through that too quickly.
Well, I think the problem, Mr. Dixon, is we're not a finance committee here, so some of this is Greek, at least to me.
My apologies.
But no, you've done an excellent job of explaining it. And the current bill, as we have it in front of us, the fiscal note that's attached then is still fairly accurate. The $200,000, is it?
Yeah, it's an as-if exercise. I believe that the method that we've used is a good way of approaching it. You know, Senator Terrio suggested a different way, and again, when you're in an as-if exercise, it's hard to say one's good, one's bad. It's certainly another way of thinking about it, which, again, comes to how people would react to this, and that's an exercise I think we're all going to be a little at sea in predicting.
Right. Yes, Representative
Cotula. I'm sorry for being so slow on this morning, Dan, but I'm missing a fundamental step here. Could you explain to me the holding the homeowner harmless? That's the step I think that's critical, and I'm not quite understanding it. I see the end result showing a terrible loss to the state, but I'm missing that fundamental step at the beginning. Can you explain how we have to hold, or why we have to hold, the homeowner harmless? I know it's probably simple, but I'm not getting it.
Sure, Representative Cotula, through the chair. I think maybe the notion is the mirror image of holding harmless. If the exemption were increased to $5,000, the homeowner now has a benefit. And what the alternative method analysis says is, let's assume that this $5,000 exemption was not used to pass a benefit onto the homeowner, but is going to be used to hold the homeowner harmless and raise additional revenue from the 4356 property. So, yeah, hold harmless may be the technical term here, but you kind of understand what I'm saying when I say it's backwards. It's not allowing any of the advantage of the $5,000 exemption to actually flow to them, but raising the average tax so they don't notice the fact they had the exemption.
Sure.
A good way of looking at it is, let's say your tax bill is $100. You're going to get an additional exemption, so now your tax bill is going to go down to $80.
Right.
Now the borough raises the millage rate, so they've given you $20, and then they take the $20
right,
back.
Right, I understand
so
that.
To you, you're still paying $100.
Right.
Because they've given you the $20, and they've
right.
taken it back.
Right.
But they've also taken the $20. They've raised that millage rate to take it back from you, and they're also taking it from every single property payer in the borough.
And
so
it's
they wouldn't
take
the full 20 back.
And that's the key, I think. How do we keep them from getting the 20 back from the homeowner?
Well, they raise the millage rate, which they control, to make it so that by offering this thing, taking advantage of this thing, you don't see any lessening of your property tax. Because they raise the overall millage rate to make it net zero to you. But in the process of raising the overall millage rate on all properties, including the oil and gas, they have swept in a huge amount of money that comes right out of the state treasury.
So if I might, then back to Mr. Dickinson, so when you're saying net zero to the homeowner, what you're really saying is the homeowner gets nothing for it, period. Is that what you're saying?
Representative Crotula, through the chair. Yeah, I mean, the math is designed so the average homeowner sees no net effect. Now, clearly, the amount of revenue raised would go up, so there might be more services, et cetera, et cetera. But the math of this spreadsheet, I think, as Senator Terrio explained, is designed to precisely say what happens if the average homeowner sees zero effect. It's neutralized.
So we give it and we take it away.
And again, Representative Cotullo, to the chair, I mean, the whole point here, this is a maximum effect. Clearly, it could be less depending on how any individual community reacted to it.
Representative Sculpton, do you have a question?
Yeah, one question, and this is where I'm not clear. On the lower part of it, the alternative method, over on the right-hand side where it says estimated additional millage required to neutralize effect on a $100,000 home. If you go down to the third category under North Slope, it says the millage to neutralize, the way I'm reading it, the millage to neutralize would be 0.111%. Now, what is confusing to me is the fact that that is the highest percentage millage of the four, and it just seems that the effect to the North Slope for personal property on the 5,000 exemption would not be as much as the other municipalities, for one, and having a larger tax base of $10 billion, it would seem that number would be the lowest instead of the highest as far as the increased millage, because you don't need that much in the North Slope to neutralize the effect as far as the amount of homes that are up there. And even if it was static, if it was the same as the North Star Borough and Valdez and Kenai, you've got such a larger tax base to work off of. Why is that number 0.111 the highest one there?
Representative, through the chair, again, the mechanics of that, if there were a single home, go for the thought experiment for a moment. Let's assume there was only one home in the North Slope Borough, and it happened to be worth $100,000. That's what you're showing here. The number of homes, the size of the base, doesn't matter in this analysis, in the alternative method. All that matters is the effect on one single average homeowner. So how is that 111 derived? How that's derived is simply the fact that you've got to make up $94 on $85,000. And what is the incremental mill rate of doing that? That's driven by the fact that North Slope's mill rate is the highest of the three. And again, I know it's always hard looking at these decimals. In fact, the Valdez number is higher, because out in the fourth decimal place there, it's a 7 as opposed to a 1. And in fact, why is it higher? It's higher because the current mill rate in Valdez is incrementally higher than the North Slope's mill rate. So
I know, but your analysis, I'm not a mathematician either, but your analysis seems inaccurate if you're basing it solely on one individual home rather than what's actually there and how many people would this would be applicable to.
Representative Sully through the chair. I guess you know, all of these are as if analyses. We did a different analysis in the fiscal note, the one above, which looks at the total revenue. And you know, I'm very comfortable with that analysis. This is another way of looking at it, and you're right. It simply identifies one home, and that may be a shortcoming to it.
Well, that'd be a real big shortcoming to it if you don't have the estimated number of homes there that this would really impact. And that's where I think it's inaccurate. That would say that there's more homes on the North Slope than proportionally than all the other areas combined.
Again, the math is based on one home, and yes, the result says, gee, you'd raise $11 million more dollars, and I think the point is, except for about 20,000 of that, all $11 million would be new revenues that the borough has because they were trying to hold the one homeowner to feel no effect of the increased exemption. So no, I mean I think your math's fine. I think you've accurately identified how this flows through. And I just it's an alternative method. I think the current fiscal note method looks at the things that you were focusing on, which is the actual size of the exemption and as it exists spread over all homes.
Here, one more time, Mr. Chairman.
And I'm going to go to the sponsor. He has an explanation.
$20,000 is what is quoted as needed to raising, and if that's the case, you don't need $11 million to do it, right?
That's correct. The $11 million doesn't suggest you're replacing the revenue. You're obviously doing a lot more than replacing the revenue. What you're doing is you're holding an average homeowner so they didn't notice the effect of the exemption.
Okay. Senator, can you help us out here?
Yeah, I think Representative Scaldi's question is he's going under the assumption that the local government would only raise the millage to recoup the lost revenue that they suffered, the loss they suffered by giving the exemption. So in my example of the $100 tax bill, you exercise the exemption, your tax bill goes down to $80. Okay, the local government has now suffered a loss of revenue. How much would they have to raise the millage rate across all property classes to make up that lost revenue? Well, they would have to, across all revenues, they'd be giving you $20, and then they maybe take back a dollar from you. They're going to take back the other 19 from all the businesses. Okay, but what we're saying is, on the bottom part of the spreadsheet, is they're not just trying to recoup the loss in revenue that they suffered. They're trying to now, they're going to make it net zero to you, the property owner. They're going to raise the millage rate high enough now that the $20 they gave you, they're going to take that back, all 20 of it back. And in the process, they're also going to take back that same millage rate on all the businesses too. And in Fairbanks and in Kenai, there's less motivation to do that because you're going to have to get a lot of residential property owners. You're going to have to get a lot of small moms and pops. But on the North Slope Borough, you don't have those same dynamics. They're almost all oil and gas properties. And so you've given them enough room now under the cap, the absolute cap that they've got, but they try and stay down around or like below 19 mils because they're bonding, the bonding agencies and how they look at things. You've now given them enough room under there to go out and collect a bunch more money off of those oil and gas properties, and every dollar that's collected off of them comes out of our state treasury. And so that's what was weighing on the Senate's mind. I mean, they wanted to grant the volunteer credit to give a little bit more of a tool to the local governments, but we have to keep our eye on what the potential impact is to the state treasury.
It's the uniqueness of the North Slope Borough. Representative Guest.
Series of questions. Is that okay?
Sure. Go right ahead. To the sponsor, to Dan.
To the sponsor, to Dan, am I correct that the first analysis answers the question, how much increased mill rate would you need to keep revenues harmless? And the second analysis is how much increased mill rate you would need to keep residential property taxpayers harmless?
At net zero, that's right.
Okay. I just want to make sure that those are the two questions.
Representative Curtullo through the chair. Yeah, I mean, I think that's right, and the only caveat there would be it's in the second analysis, it's the average homeowner, so you're still going to have a different effect if you're way above or way below that average.
Correct. Thank you for that correction. Let me ask you, since this isn't a new program, we're extending a current program, Dan, what has been the reaction? Since this is all about how municipalities are going to react to this incentive, what has been the reaction in the past? Which approach have they taken?
Mr. Chairman, I think if you look at the numbers here and the millage, the current millage rates, you can see that those communities that have tremendous oil and gas properties are pretty much right up at the cap. They have taken the millage rate basically right up as high as they can go and diverted dollars from the Treasury.
And those who wouldn't want a sales tax? Fairbanks is pretty high on this.
Well, we're at 15. We could go up almost another 5 mils.
5 mils. Okay. I won't get into that one. Dan, I had a question on your analysis, the alternative method. You evaluated it on the whole 15,000, not on the difference. Why, in your end analysis, aren't the final numbers divided by three, and we look at a third, since that's the actual difference between the 10 and the 15, either to the sponsor or to Dan.
And I think, Dan, I misspoke when I first gave my example. The dollars in the final columns are calculated only on the additional 5,000. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I mean, the number is going to show up both in column E and column G, but I think you've accurately described it. It's the total effect from adding the 5,000 to what is there.
So you would not divide it by three. That is the number. And I think the dynamic there is if you wanted to do the calculation to say, well, let's make it net zero on the residential property owner for the entire 15, then you would be taking away something that they've had for nearly 30 years, and I don't think any government's going to erode that benefit that those residential property taxpayers have enjoyed for roughly 30 years. When we're now giving an additional five, the government would give it, take it away, and the property owner would see no impact comparing the new year's property tax to the previous. But if you did it on a complete 15, the property owner would now be paying would lose the benefit that they've had from the $10,000 for years and years, and I don't think that's very likely to happen.
My apologies, Mr. Chairman, and my apologies to the sponsor. One more time, tell me, this seems like it's an evaluation of the whole 15, and tell me why that isn't one more time.
No, it's not, and the $85,000 is there because he had to know the value of the home that still remains for tax purposes. He had to come up with that estimate so he knew what to apply the millage rate to.
But there's no – the evaluation in the first scenario says what's the change in the millage rate, which is an appropriate question. And this one says what's the impact on the entire millage rate. That's a different question, and I still don't understand – why in an analysis you wouldn't look at the change in millage rate for that extra 5,000? Why is the 10,000? Why are we evaluating? We're evaluating the current statute in this. We have that initial 10,000.
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
I think if you look at column I, in both cases, that is the incremental millage rate required to solve the question we've set.
And how can that be when the current evaluation of a home really isn't 100K, but it's 90K because that's, I mean, I don't understand how we're evaluating all the $15,000. That's what it seems as if we're doing.
If you, column D, if you will, already includes the effect of the 10,000. I mean, I mean, if we were to put in, and again, I'm looking at the lower block of text, if we were to put in 15,000 in column E, and this is basically following Senator Terrio's analysis, if we were to put in column E 15,000, then the value to the proposed homeowner would be their total exemption, and it would be roughly three times those numbers. You would then raise their taxes to the point where they would no longer, the new taxes under this analysis would then be taking away the 10,000 that they currently have.
Okay, I get it. I'm sorry. It just finally hit. Thank you. My apologies. Question about, you've mentioned Fairbanks and Kenai quite often, and they have kind of some alternatives. Why in this bill is it North Slope and not Valdez? I mean, if we're worried about our oil and gas property taxes and the revenue, why didn't the Senate see to exclude Valdez as well?
Well, I think Valdez is currently at the max. They couldn't. I don't think they could utilize the mechanism in the same manner. Plus, their oil and gas properties are magnitudes less than North Slope Borough.
Through the chair, if I could
go ahead.
Make an observation here. There is a informal max of 20 mils, and the reason that is informal is that what the municipalities recognize is that up to 20 mils, the companies aren't really going to. In law is 30 mils, and in that area between 20 mils and 30 mils, it becomes a good deal more complex. There's some debate within the department, in the Department of Law, and we're probably going to have to test this the next year or two, but at the moment, if the city of Valdez were to go to a mill rate of 21, what would happen is the credit, the way the law is phrased, since most of that property is Alyeska property, is pipeline property, one interpretation is what it would start to do is eat into the amount that the state receives from the pipeline in, say, the unorganized boroughs. In other words, a taxpayer who had property in Valdez and outside of Valdez could take the credit outside of Valdez against the Valdez area. So part of that would be offset the way it is now. On the other hand, some organization, I shouldn't be naming taxpayers here, but let's say an organization that has marine equipment, spill cleanup equipment in Valdez and in no other boroughs, they, in fact, would start to feel the pain as soon as Valdez went above 20 on its way to the 30 mils. So I believe that, in fact, these can go further. I think Senator Terrio has quite accurately observed that sort of the mill rate in general seems to be sort of directly proportional to the amount of oil and gas property in that jurisdiction.
And to follow up, if the assumption is no one kind of goes over 20 mils, then North Slope only has a little ways to go, and this assumption of 0.1111 would put it up to 30.
No, I think you need to move a decimal place over.
Slope
would go from about 20. Would go up to about 20. Valdez would in fact go from 2. Valdez would go 2.1. In the HB6 analysis, Valdez would actually hit the 30 mils.
Okay.
There are other factors going on in the North Slope. I believe the rating agencies, the bonding agencies, are probably a major influence on the mill rates that are allowed there.
And then I guess my final question for what the Senate was thinking, if the reason for the exclusion of the North Slope was this potential problem, why didn't the Senate send over a more accurate fiscal note? I mean, if this was the evaluation, then the fiscal note really should be about $1.4 million, not $200,000.
Mr. Chairman, I think really the fiscal note could be an asterisk and come with pages and pages of explanation, because there's so many dynamics here that you're trying to evaluate, right down to the average value of a home in a community and what's the assembly they're going to do.
In determining a fiscal note.
It should be.
Okay, any other questions? This has been very educational and enlightening. Are you comfortable representing a guest? I think you were the one that was thinking about making an amendment.
I will, and I'll pass it up. Although,
oh, we do have other people here. I know Representative Halker wanted Ms. Cook and somebody from the Department of Law, somebody from the Department of Economic Community Development, but he's not here, so.
Actually, if Department of Law, there is one question that a constitutional question has been raised on whether or not. That was the question that Representative Hal Crow had raised to me.
Okay. Yeah, please join us.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Sarah Felix from the Attorney General's office, and I'm here in place of Margie Bandor, who is following this legislation. Margie couldn't be here because she's having a root canal this morning.
Hmm.
So,
a more pleasant experience.
Yeah.
I tried to do a quick study to be ready to answer the questions. So,
go ahead. Questions, Richard.
Thank you. The question has been raised on whether or not excluding one specific borough in this bill raises constitutional questions. Are you comfortable answering that?
Through the chair, Representative Guest, yes. Now, the version of the bill that I have doesn't specifically exempt a borough. You're meaning that the effect of it is indirectly. We looked at the case law, and Ms. Vandor is very experienced in this area and has done cases in this area, and it seems to us that the analysis under an equal protection challenge would be judged under probably the lowest level of scrutiny, and as long as the state had a substantial or actually a reasonable basis for having this distinction in the bill, that it should survive an equal protection analysis. There's no it's an optional exemption. There's no constitutional right to have a particular tax exemption for a municipality, so as long as there's a reasonable state interest underlying this bill and there's no discriminatory intent, we think that it would be okay.
To follow up on that, do you believe there is discriminatory intent as it is now?
Through, Mr. Chairman, I have no reason to believe that. I mean, I'm just saying what the standard is in the case law that I reviewed. I'm not trying to imply that at all. I can give you the case site that mentioned that standard if you'd like.
That's fine. Any other questions for Jim? Yeah?
None for me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Actually, I have one last one for Sarah. Along the lines of putting different tax rates for different properties, any experience with that? I mean, wouldn't we use the same analysis?
Through the chair, Representative Curtula, we would, but as you all are probably very aware, we do have that one statute in Alaska that says you can't tax oil and gas property at a higher rate than the rest of the property. So you'd have to, operating within that constraint, I think that as long as you didn't discriminate against oil and gas property, you could establish differential tax rates, I suppose, for residential as opposed to commercial. Is that what your question is?
Or change that rate. I mean, just
if you want to change that statute through the chair, you certainly, that's within your purview.
Thank you.
Well, that's another issue for another time, I think.
Sounds like an interim project.
Okay. Are you Representative Guest?
And was there other testimony you wanted to call? Is that
is there anybody else have questions for anybody in the audience? Sam Cook, Community Development. Okay. And then also Steve Anderson online. Representative Guest, did you?
Thank you. I will move Amendment 1.
Okay. Amendment 1 has been moved. Any objection?
I object.
Okay. We do have objection discussion.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Although I sincerely appreciate the sponsor explaining the difference in the fiscal notes, and I believe that the impact has to be taken in consideration, it bothers me, and I don't like it as a policy matter or a precedent matter when we start excluding areas. And that may be just a value difference between me and members of the committee, and I'm fine with that. But I would like, if we're going to, given that the law is already in place for all boroughs, if we're going to extend that, I believe we should extend it for all boroughs.
Okay,
Representative Scoton. Well, I agree in principle with the amendment, and certainly for all boroughs being equal. And I'm not comfortable with this analysis. I'll say that I think that if you look at the top section I, how the compensations to reach the achieved exemption clearly goes down on the North Slope borough to generate the amount of tax revenue needed, and the lower analysis under the alternative method goes up. I still am not comfortable with that, and I disagree with that formation of analysis. But I would I think that the intent of this bill, particularly as it's geared toward giving an exemption to the fire service districts and how that applies, I would have to defer to the experts in the taxation department that would say that there is a very significant potential impact of the state coffers, and that's what bothers me. Even though I disagree with it, the analysis, I would defer to them on this. And I think, does this get another referral to finance?
Finance, yeah.
So I would not be objecting to move it out as it is, and that's why I'm speaking against the amendment with all due respect.
And I will just chime in. I will agree with Representative Scalzi. I think that if you look at the tax base differences between the four boroughs, that there is significantly difference between the North Slope borough and any other borough. And I don't feel like this is going to have an adverse impact on the folks who do live in the North Slope borough, but it could have a major or a large impact to the state coffers.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. It may not have an adverse on the borough, but then you start to think about the individuals and the homeowners. And what I don't like is, why should we allow homeowners in one part of the state to pay less if you're going to hold them harmless than other homeowners? That's where I dislike it, and that's what I'm worried about having a discriminatory effect. So I'm going to support the amendment, and then maybe, I'm going to support this amendment, and if this doesn't happen, then I have another suggestion. But I think we're making a deep mistake not to think about the individuals, not just the boroughs, but also the individuals who are paying those taxes. That bothers me if we start to discriminate on that level.
Senator Terrell, would you like to speak to the amendment?
Well, just to encourage you not to lose sight of the volunteer section, which you have bumped the value of the potential additional exemption up in that section. That does accrue to the North Slope borough. That was an amendment from Senator Olson that we did accept on the Senate floor that made that benefit available to them. And I think the comment that they don't lose under the other portion, they still keep the current $10,000 exemption. We structured it so that happens. And it may not be of major importance to the municipality, city and borough of Juneau, or the municipality of Anchorage, because neither of those communities currently exercise any of the exemption for their citizens. And they, by and large, have paid professional EMS and fire staff. In Kenai, that's not the case. In Fairbanks, that's not the case. In most of the state, that's not the case. And these communities are having an increasingly difficult time getting the volunteers that are needed to provide that basic service. And I can almost guarantee that if the amendment were successful, there would be no bill this year.
Can I ask a question to the sponsor? Would there be a bill this year if we just deleted Section 1 and kept Section 2? Because I would agree with you in your analysis. I think Section 2 is very important. So my intent is not to kill that section.
I don't know. I'd have to hear from the different communities. I'm not sure.
Representative Murkowski.
Well, that was, I guess, where I was going. I agree with the sponsor completely that there is great value, and we discussed certainly Section 2 a great deal in this committee when we took up House Bill 6, and I think everyone, in fact, liked that portion of the bill better than the initial brainchild of it. And it seems that we spent considerable time and energy trying to understand the impact here, and I think we have concluded that there is substantial or potential substantial impact to state coffers, and I think that should concern all of us. But I agree with Representative Katula, and I discussed this briefly with the sponsor about, it doesn't seem right that you should deny the residents of one area just because they happen to have substantial oil and surrounded by substantial oil and gas property. So it seems like this is not the right answer to that. And if we can't get that part of it right, could we maybe at least get the good section of the bill, not that the first section isn't good, Senator Terrio, but the section of the bill that we all can agree to and get that moving, for whatever it's worth.
On those comments, Ms. Chair, I, at this time I'll remove Amendment 1 and offer an Amendment 2, which deletes Section 1.
Conceptual amendment number 1. And you want to delete Section 1 or just leave Section 2?
Correct.
Any objection?
object for discussion.
Objection? Discussion.
For clarification, I'd like to hear the sponsor's concern or support of this amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section number 1 is an optional tool that communities can use. The thought behind this bill initially sprang from the property tax issue that was on the ballot at the last general election. And our communities, Representative Salzies and mine, do take advantage of the current $10,000 and to try and give the government a tool to say to the people, we can save you on your property tax if you consider a sales tax. You're doing away with that tool over the stated concern is not something I would support. I think it still is beneficial, certainly potentially beneficial to my community, and actually to all of our communities if the local governments choose to turn that off and take advantage of it. But I would oppose the
If there's no other discussion, ready for roll call?
Representative Scalzi.
No.
Representative Murkowski.
Yes.
Representative Getz.
Yes.
Representative Katula.
Yes.
Absent. Chairman Morgan.
No.
Mr. Meyer.
No.
3-3.
Okay, it does not pass. Okay, we have the bill back before us.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number 1 that's in front of people.
Okay, we have an amendment.
I don't think I need to speak to it. I think that's been enough discussion.
Amendment number 1 is back before us. Actually, I liked your last amendment better, Representative Getz.
I tried to compromise.
Right, you're right.
Tried.
Object.
There is objection to amendment number 1.
And brief discussion. My intention is to get with Mr. Van Sant and go over this analysis again. I'm still not comfortable with it. And if the analysis comes out the way I think it should, I would offer the same amendment in finance to the finance committee and ask them to look.
Certainly, if this gets to the floor, we'll have another shot at this. I think we all need to digest what we learned this morning.
Yeah, we have a lot of luck on the floor.
But you think that we're going to explain this
on the floor.
No, I mean, as hard as it is, this is where we should be doing the work on this. I mean, we're the committee at this point that's responsible for it. And I think I've got a grip on what the problem is, but, you know, not being certain that causes me a problem. And the second problem I have is still, it just is fundamentally not right to discriminate between residents of the state.
Personally, we could have used you about 5 minutes ago.
Yep.
Had a title. I'm sorry, we're turning to
that's it. Thank you.
For the record, Representative Helcrow has joined us. I don't know where to start, Representative Helcrow.
There's an amendment in front of you that's on the table and about to be voted on.
We've discussed it for the past hour.
Comment on Representative Cotullo's last comment about, and I agree, we should be doing the work here. My problem is that in erring, I would rather err conservatively on not reducing the state coffers if the analysis is correct. But I think I would like to go over the analysis again, and I don't want to slow the bill up. I think that we can do it in finance, or we can do it on the floor and get another shot if I'm proven right. If not, then conservatively speaking, I think our best interest is to protect the effect this would have on the state.
The chair's going to call brief at ease. Representative Gift.
For the second time, I withdraw amendment number one. Amendment number one. Because that's on the table. And I'd like to reconsider my vote on conceptual amendment number one to delete section one.
And a question.
Can we as a committee rescind our action on the first conceptual amendment?
Okay. Yeah. Move to rescind.
We have Cook here, so that okay.
Couldn't we get in trouble?
Yeah. Okay. Any objection to rescinding our motion? Action on conceptual amendment number one. No objection. Go ahead, Representative Guest.
I move conceptual amendment number one, I would guess, to remove section one of the bill.
Objection. No objection. That is done. So conceptual amendment number one.
Mr. Chair.
Leave section one, leave section two. Representative Guest.
I'd also, I guess it's maybe the prerogative of the chairs or the committee, but given that, I think then we should move to zero out the fiscal note because there's been testimony that's minimal fiscal impact, unless the sponsor does not want us to do that. It would help it bypass finance.
Right, Senator.
Chairman, I don't, there still is going to be a fiscal note of some magnitude because of the exemption you're giving from the volunteers. How many volunteers in each community is, again, it's difficult to tell. So I don't think you're able to bypass finance. Plus, I think that Representative Davies, who sponsored House Bill 6, which contained the portion that this committee just zeroed out, probably would like to have an opportunity to
withdraw that.
Yeah. I do think it should go to finance for those exact
kind of help with them, and that helps today.
Okay. Yes, Representative McCaffrey.
I would move that we move from committee Senate Bill Number 4 as amended with individual recommendations and the asterisk.
Any objection? Seeing none, that is done. Thank you. Yes. Okay. There's one more item that the co-chair wants to bring up.
We have pictures on the floor at 9:45. So we need to.
Yeah. And they're going till 10:15. They're.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Go.
Let's do it real quick. We're doing real quick. Oh,
resolution. You
gonna adopt the title change first?
Oh, we're bringing 181 up again.
It's registration. Oh, good. Yeah. It's to great.
call the back the committee reading first meeting back to order. At this time, we got one more item, House Bill CS for Senate Bill 181. We need to adopt the title change. Oh, we need to bring 181 back up.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And before you got House CS for Senate Bill 181, and my aide, Bill Lawrence, will tell you what it essentially does, change it.
For the record, Bill Lawrence, staff to Representative Morgan and to the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. Before you, you have a title change and a, excuse me, a draft CS. I will tell you what the CS does. The ramifications of that would be better addressed by the representative from AHFC. The bill itself removes, the CS removes everything but the teacher loan program. There is a title change. The title is changed. Section 1 of the of 181 is removed from the bill. Section 2 remains. That's the section dealing with teacher loans. An amendment, another amendment has been added at the request of AHFC. Again, the representative from AHFC can explain it, but essentially it's requested by AHFC to ensure that the teacher housing loans receive the same interest rates as all other small community housing loans in the program. It should have been included the first time around. It was an inadvertent oversight and in the first bill. And that's about what the bill does. It's now a teacher, it's a loan for addressing.
Plus it takes out the cap.
Yeah, that's gone. That's all gone.
Representative Murkowski.
Under the definition section under page 3, teacher housing means we've changed it from a single-family residence to a multifamily residence. And how are we defining a multifamily residence?
I believe, I will defer, but I believe that it is single-family and duplexes. That's the definition of housing, I believe.
Okay. I just wanted to confirm it.
At this time, we'll bring up John Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee.
John, real quick, could you, what do you think about the bill and what's your analysis?
For the record, my name is John Bitney. I'm legislative liaison for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Just reviewing quickly here to make sure. The obviously, Section 1 of the old bill is gone here. There is no longer a threshold level. I would point out that this was a long effort in terms of establishing a threshold. When the bill started, the bill was a repeal of the entire program. And the concerns expressed were that not only issues of fairness, but also looking at some of the upper-end loans that have been made, because there are no limitations on the income of the borrower or the size of the loan. There were some loans in excess of $300,000 and $400,000, and we had proposed perhaps as a compromise some sort of a threshold level for the 1% issue to apply. With the idea that any portion of any loan that would have been above that threshold would have paid, would not have received the benefit of the 1% discount. Our suggestion in the Senate side was, as we felt that the $250,000 level was a reasonable level. And I'm only mentioning this, Mr. Chairman, because I'm not sure the reaction of the sponsor to that, but I do point out that HFC did support a threshold level on the Senate side. We felt, we're just picking numbers, I'll be honest about that. But looking at the cost of housing, looking at the past activity in the program, we felt $250,000 level, or at least as a minimum, was a reasonable level.
So we can't. We got four sessions. We'd have to come back this afternoon. You want to try that?
I'll just everybody's schedule.
This afternoon.
What time?
I'm open.
I'm open.
Taking that ease.
Okay, we're taking that ease and recess. Okay, we'll call it a check. Okay.